Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. Two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Paraskevopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas. Welcome, everybody, back to The Fighting Priest. My name is Father Ted Paraskevopoulos, and with me is my co-host, as usual, Father Thomas Sandberg from up in Manitoba. Father Thomas, how's it going?
I'm going all right.
Good, good. And today, we have a very special guest on our podcast, on our 25th episode. Today, we have with us Nick Grigoriadis, who is kind of a big deal in the jiu-jitsu scene. He is initially, I believe, from South Africa. Is that right, Nick?
Yeah, that's totally right.
Awesome, awesome. And are you living in LA right now?
Yes, I am. And I got to tell you, I have never heard anyone outside of Greece pronounce my surname so perfectly well.
Well, there you go.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Well, it's kind of my job, right? So,
yeah.
Yeah. And Nick is, I believe, a third degree black belt. Yeah. Under Hodja Gracie.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And I believe you were Hodja Gracie's first black belt, were you not?
I was. I am.
Awesome. Awesome. And you're also the founder of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood?
Indeed.
And I'm not even going to get into how many world titles and championships you've won. You've done quite a few over the years.
No world titles, but several national titles.
Oh, no world titles, really? Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I wish I could say I had some, but it didn't work out as planned.
That's okay. And I actually have your book, the Black Belt Blueprint.
Nice.
I'm reading through that now. And so that's like, it's really great. I'm reading through that right now. And yeah, so we're just really happy to have you on. You're of Greek descent as well, I believe. And
yes,
we're really happy to have you on.
Happy to be on, my man. Happy to talk to you guys.
All right, Nick, thanks for being with us today, for taking time out of your day to join us. Why don't you tell me and maybe our listeners a bit about your background, maybe your family, where you were born, that type of thing.
So thanks for having me on. And my background is I was born in South Africa to a Greek father and a South African mother. And that's where I grew up as well, in Cape Town, which is at the very tip of South Africa. And when I was 23, I moved to England and lived there for about 10 years. And then spent some time traveling the world and then moved to America 3 years ago. And that's where I find myself right now.
Oh, nice. So how did you get into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? Did you get into it in South Africa or...
I did some training in South Africa, a little bit of submission grappling, a little bit of MMA training.
Okay.
With the coach out there. And then when I moved to London, I started training at the Gracie Academy in London, the Roger Gracie Academy. And that's pretty much where I got involved.
Okay. So how old were you when you began training then?
I was 20. Well, when I started training grappling, I think I was around 19. When I started training jiu-jitsu, I was 23.
Okay. That's pretty good. Yeah, I was 27 when I started, so good age. Hmm. So what?
Definitely.
What was the decision to move to America?
I met an American woman. American girl who I was in love with, and we had been traveling together, and we were looking for a place to settle down. And so we decided America was the best bet, partly because she was from here, but also because I really love America. Mm-hmm. So that was the impetus for doing that.
So did you start an academy out there in America?
No. No, I didn't. I don't have my own academy. I have some affiliated academies which I travel to, but I don't have a specific academy of my own.
Okay. I see. So what are you currently What's it? So you're in Los Angeles currently.
Mm-hmm.
What's the situation like right now? Can you train at all?
Yeah, you can. You can train small groups. I mean, technically, it's not. I don't think it's fully legal, but I train with a small group of people that I trust, and we've all been tested for COVID, and yeah, it's on the DL, if you know what I mean, the down low.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because recently, I don't know if you know, I saw a post by Ben Eddy, and he was training, I guess, for Combat Jiu-Jitsu Worlds, I think, or maybe a tournament coming up. And I know he's in California, and he had alluded that he had to train in secret as well. So I was just wondering what it's like in different parts of California. Because I know in Northern California, you have Tanner Rice, and they've been training openly throughout this whole pandemic pretty much. So I believe the cases are a bit different in Northern California compared to Southern California. So
Yeah, it's a pretty messed up situation here for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same here. Like here in Toronto, it's like a lot of the same restrictions you see in California. And like I've been training, you know, on the down low, but the clubs are closed. So yeah, you pick one or two people that you trust that are in the same circle, and you know, people are training in people's homes. What are you gonna do?
Yeah, exactly.
So Nick, like, tell me a little bit about the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood. Like, what's that organization all about? Like, how did that come about?
Sure. So I started a blog called the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood in 2007, and was just putting my writings about the art on there. And it seemed to get quite a bit of traction and quite a bit of interest. And eventually it evolved into an association of affiliated academies that I ran, or that I continue to run. And we also have a line of apparel and some instructional Jiu-Jitsu instructional products. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we just had an ethos that we tried to be evolving, constantly evolving and growing, and not, you know, there's a very tribal mentality in Jiu-Jitsu sometimes, and there's also a very closed-minded mentality I've noticed, especially amongst Brazilians and new practitioners who just think that everything their instructor says is gospel. And funny, I didn't even plan to use that word gospel, but now I realize it's quite quite fitting for this conversation. And so I'm always, with Jiu-Jitsu, I was always looking, trying to look for progressive ways to train and approach it. And that was the ethos behind what I was doing with Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, because I see a lot of the content online, and I follow you on Instagram, and so it's because it's interesting, because you said, Father Thomas, that you don't own your own club, but you have this kind of association, this affiliation with different clubs. Mm-hmm. Where I'm assuming you kind of, do you go and you guest teach at these places?
Yeah, I teach a seminar at each of them every year.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's fun. I like hanging out with the guys and seeing how they've progressed over the year and just connecting with them. It's actually a lot of fun.
It kind of gives you the freedom to move around and not be tied down anywhere. And
Sometimes, well, people don't realize that owning an academy is, it's not as fun and easy as it looks from the outside, generally. It's quite a difficult thing with a lot of logistical stuff involved. And yeah, I don't think that is at this point compatible with my enjoyment of Jiu-Jitsu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my instructors here in Toronto, Arthur Suka Chandramohan, he's a European champion. He's a black belt. And he does the same thing. He floats around. Like, he teaches at a number of academies in Toronto. And he doesn't, like, he's been offered to kind of, even a lot of people like financial backers and people who believe in him, they're like, start your own club. And he has the same mentality. He says, you know, I like the freedom of being able to kind of teach where I want to teach and travel when I want to travel and do seminars where I want to do seminars. And also I like to focus on the students I have as opposed to the place. Yeah, he's like, I have a core group of students that I teach across a number of different clubs, and they're kind of my students, and I help and I grow and I cultivate them. And that's what I'm focusing on. But yeah, the logistics of it and the risk even, because like, you look at the last year with COVID, right? How many how many gym owners have been suffering or have lost their businesses, right? So,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sounds like my kind of guy. I'd love to meet him sometime.
Oh yeah. I'll try to connect you. Yeah. nice. So one thing I just want to ask you about, I was watching a video of you on YouTube where it was like it was kind of like an interview, kind of like a promo video, where you were talking about, it was like that one, you remember the one you filmed where it was like, you were on a beach rolling.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm
spirit
talking about?
Spirit of Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the spirit of Jiu-Jitsu. That's the one. Yeah. And in something that really kind of struck me, you were talking about refining your life, right? So as you're getting older and as the years kind of go by, you've noticed that, you know, you've kind of tried to cut away the inessentials, you were saying in the video. And
I think actually that might've been the spirit of Jiu-Jitsu video, which is, the soul of Jiu-Jitsu video, the one that's set in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking about the sword, using the analogy of a sword, is that the one you're referring to?
I think so. Yeah. And you were talking about, yeah, you're trying to, you know, get rid of things that are, what you consider to be inessential or hindrances and just kind of like simplifying things in life. And, and I really like
it
that.
It goes back to this concept that a friend of mine shared with me. In your life, there's generally two types of things. One is crocodiles and the other is kittens. And crocodiles are things that cause strife or cause discomfort or difficulty. And kittens are things that cause happiness and comfort. And what most people do is, to improve the quality of their life, they try to add more kittens. But the easier and better way to do it is to just remove the crocodiles. So a similar kind of ethos.
Mm-hmm. Like a minimalist approach.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, as you said earlier, just removing the inessentials, just getting rid of things that don't serve you, things that waste mental energy, basically dead weight, whether it be relationships or, you know, anything in your life, right? Like this, we all have so much more than we need. And, you know, we think it's good for us, but it's generally not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that struck me, like, at least as a priest. Why? Because it's like, well, a lot of times we talk about, on this show, we talk about these kind of, you know, unexpected connections we see as Orthodox priests between jiu-jitsu and like the Orthodox spiritual life that a lot of people don't see. And one of them is, you know, now we're kind of entering, as Easter approaches in May, you know, in the Orthodox tradition, we have Great Lent, right? Where we have like this long 40-day fasting period, right? And a lot of people don't like it, right?
Sure.
It's because, of course, it involves fasting. And, you know, in the Orthodox tradition, that's like mostly vegan, which really, it's really hard for people to go from like, you know, eating whatever they want to like eating very little. But it's more like an ethos. It's not about food. It's like this whole season coming up of Lent. It's like, it's about stripping away. It's exactly what you were saying in the video, which really struck me. It's stripping away the inessentials. We have more than what we need in life. And we have so many distractions and so many things. And when you strip those things away, you can really kind of focus on what's essential in your life, what's important. And also mm-hmm. it brings you great joy because then you can focus on the things that are not detrimental to you.
Again, this sort of reminds me of a Buddhist point, which I'll try to get right, which is contentment is found not in having more, but in wanting less.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something to that. I didn't realize that you guys did a 40-day fast. I thought Lent was less than that, but it's really impressive and really cool. And I mean, I think fasting in general is a very, very powerful spiritual practice that also has a lot of physiological and mental benefits. And it's something I do almost 5 or 6 days a week.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the slow burn, you know, like a lot of times people will fast like short bursts, you know, but this kind of long drawn out, you know, time period where you're basically vegan. And then also you're doing other things like you're doing spiritual exercises and, you know, and if you're doing jiu-jitsu, you're also doing physical rigorous exercise as well, which is also taxing on the system, especially if you're eating less. But it's really beneficial in the long run. Like it really kind of tests you physically and emotionally, but also mentally and spiritually.
Sure.
You know, I only started jiu-jitsu about a year and a half ago. Like Father Thomas has been doing it for 10 years now. But for me, you know, just starting it out a year ago and then going through my first Lent while still training. So, you know, it's like as a priest, you're doing all these services, you're running around, you're also not eating a lot during this 40 days, and then you're going and you're rolling at night, you know, 4 or 5 times a week, right?
Sure.
Really hard, but also like I found that it was extremely beneficial. Like it just really helped me. The fasting helped me focus in jiu-jitsu, if anything.
It definitely has a way of bringing a clarity to the mind, and also allows you to focus more. I don't know why exactly. I think it's probably physiologically because the organism is wanting to divert resources to observation because it's searching for food. Mm-hmm. But either way, it's got very powerful effects. In fact, in my new book, I have a whole section on intermittent fasting because I believe in that practice so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I do it as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely brings clarity to the mind. And the ancients understood this. This is like why, like, you know, in the Orthodox faith, we say like the fathers of the church, like, you know, like kind of prominent spiritual leaders throughout the centuries, like they're all big proponents of fasting. Why? Because it tends to declutter the mind. You know,
it definitely does.
Help you focus whatever you're doing, whether it's like study or exercise or spiritual worship, right? And it's definitely something that we do like in the Orthodox faith all the time. Like, you know, it's like mm-hmm. we have traditions where it's like, you know, when you wake up in the morning before you go to church, you try not to eat anything. And people are like, why not have a big breakfast and then go? It's like, well, because when you're lethargic, right, from eating too much, you tend to like doze off. Right. Your mind tends to like go into like sleep mode. So you're sharper when you fast, I find.
You absolutely are. You absolutely are. And it's also when you're rolling around doing jiu-jitsu, I find it's when you've been fasting, there's just less matter in your body, which makes you a little bit more agile and a little bit more flexible as well. You can bend a little bit further forward because your stomach's empty and I just feel better, right? There's no other way to put it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so coming up to our final thoughts, having spoken about kind of like your life and, you know, kind of growing up in South Africa and then going to England and then coming to LA, and a little bit about kind of like your process or your growth in jiu-jitsu, your philosophy. I guess if you could leave us with, a final thought, what's perhaps like the most important lesson you've learned in your jiu-jitsu journey that you could impart to a student, if you thought what was the most important thing that you could teach us as far as the philosophy of jiu-jitsu, what would that be? I know I'm putting you on the spot right now. I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, that's an excellent question, Father Ted. I think I would have to say that it's something that's very closely tied into your religion, which is its humility. Mm-hmm. Life has one of my favorite quotes, which was very pertinent to me recently, is by Ernest Hemingway, which says, "Life breaks everybody, and some are strong in the broken places." Mm-hmm. And I think jiu-jitsu is a reflection of that, because jiu-jitsu is going to break you, right? Like in some way, it's going to break your ego, it's going to break your body, or it's going to break your self-image when you get beaten, because there's always a bigger dog, right? There's always a tougher guy. And I think that's what jiu-jitsu has taught me to do, is just try to move through the world with a little bit more humility, and real humility as opposed to false humility. And I think anyone who's involved in the arts, it's never going to hurt you to become more humble, like truly humble. And as I said, not in an artificial way, but true humility that's based in strength, not weakness. So I would tell anyone on the journey to focus on that.
Thank you very much for that. And that's a great message, and something we've actually discussed in the past in some of our episodes. It reminds me a little bit of meekness, you know, the word meek, not a lot of people use it these days. It's like a biblical word, right? And mm-hmm. most people, they think of meekness as being kind of like shy or not very powerful. Mm-hmm. But we had a whole, we had a whole episode on this about how meekness is not about being weak. It's actually about being strong, but gentle, you know, and humble, like knowing you have, strength, knowing you have ability, but knowing when to use it and when not to use it. And to be able to be gentle with other human beings. Right. And that's the real source of humility. It's not a matter of, always exercising strength or ability or showing off and things like that, but rather having that ability, but knowing when to use it and when not to use it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much. Glad.
My pleasure, guys. Yeah. My pleasure. Really good to talk to you. And, it's such a cool little, niche that you guys have found. I hope you reach a lot of people with your message and your show.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we started this with Father Thomas like during the first lockdown, like, you know, almost a year ago. We're coming up to our to our 1 year episode, and we were just kind of bored. We're like, oh, we're in a lockdown. We don't know what to do. Let's do a podcast about Orthodox and Jiu-Jitsu, which doesn't exist, right? And we're like, how many Orthodox people or other even priests or how many other people are actually doing this that besides us, right? Because we thought we were just the only ones. And then all these people came to the woodwork. So we've interviewed like a ton of Greek Orthodox and priests who do jiu-jitsu in the States. And like,
that's wild.
Yeah.
That's
religious guys who are like running churches, but they're also like choking people out on the weekends. It's crazy. And it was, so all these people came out of the woodwork. And so we've had a kind of a nice journey kind of meeting all these different people and hearing their stories. So we really appreciate you taking your time. We know you're busy to kind of come on and share a little bit of your story with us.
Yeah, I appreciate you too. And blessings on both of you.
Thank you. Awesome.
Thank you again. And we hope to see you and talk to you soon.
Okay, guys. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests, an independent podcast. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul. God bless.